Hello and welcome to Scoppy Radio. My name is Daniel Johansson.
And I'm Maureen Smith. And today we are joined by Joanna Moffat, James Welch, and Elijah Lee, the team behind Core Productions' upcoming production of La Boheme 2.0. How are y'all doing today?
I'm pretty good. So
good. Yeah, the classic.
Thank you so much for having us.
I am going to not forget this time to do the classic, we are in a pandemic preface, which is to say that if there is any sound oddities, that's likely the reason why. But honestly, like, we're getting the hang of it.
You know,
we're in Discord, we're hanging out.
Yeah.
Y'all have been super patient and helpful with making that happen too, so thank you so much for that.
Oh, no problem.
But I say let's get right into it. So I think the first thing probably that would be most helpful for, I feel like some of our audience may be familiar with Core in the past, but if not, would you mind kind of just like briefly introducing Core and the
sure.
premise behind Boheme 2.0?
Yeah. So, hi, I'm Joanna. I am the artistic director of Core Productions, and I'm also playing Mimi in Boheme 2.0. And the reason that we started Core in the beginning was because we wanted to create a grassroots movement that would support the furthering and the furthering of opera. You know, I think that creating an intimate event where people feel comfortable and confident to interact with the cast and with the crew makes people feel comfortable around opera and like they want to experience it more. So that's why we started Core.
Nice. Yeah. And because that was the one that I know that I've seen was the Boheme in a Bar.
Was six years ago.
Yeah, and that one was a pretty, like, the story behind that was just that it was, like, you and a couple of folks hanging out and were like, we should just do Boheme here, right?
Yeah, well, so I used to work at a bar on the north side of Chicago called Act One Pub Main Stage, and it was a pub and a venue, and we decided that, like, the way that the bar was shaped, it was kind of, like, in an oval shape. And we could do Boheme sort of in the round-ish, around and inside of the audience and creating an intimate experience where people felt indirectly like they were part of the show. Like we would never, force them to like get up and talk about themselves or something like that. But it was interactive in a non-forceful way. People felt like they were part of the show and part of the experience versus, I don't know, there's so many things.
Yeah.
Like, I think we struggle as a genre because people feel disconnected from what's going on because the stage is like 30 feet or more away. You know, they don't understand what the words mean. We're reading super titles. We're like, there's so many things that take us away. Sorry, my dogs are barking right now.
There is nothing truer than a good Scoppy Radio podcast than animals in the background.
Oh, yeah.
That's what we know. And
we're
love.
Like really getting back to like the essence of what this podcast is about is animal interruption.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyway, we just wanted to create an environment where everyone from like the highest level patron of opera to someone who had never experienced it before and never really thought about experiencing it before would feel comfortable.
Right.
Because I think both viewpoints are valid, you know?
Right. Absolutely. Well, and what I love, like in terms of like that germ of an idea, like having specifically Boheme in a bar, like that, the subject matter so speaks to that level of intimacy. Like I've seen a couple of productions of Boheme that are in more intimate settings and it plays so well in that.
Well, you believe it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, cause like a whole chunk of it is in a bar. Yeah.
So now, like, I'm just trying to think of what the worst possible opera would be to do in a bar.
In a bar?
Oh, what's like
the one with elephants?
Salome. Aida. Aida would be rough.
Also, it wouldn't have to be in a bar. So like that, our space shifted. Mm, you know, when mm-hmm. we did different productions, and
right.
and that was the thing that was cool. So we did continue to do a couple of productions in the Act One pub, but then after that, we wanted to move Figaro into a house because, duh, Figaro takes place in a house, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it worked really, really well. It was cool because we got to take the audience on a trip with us throughout the house. Like, you were watching the characters, you know, in their rooms, in the garden, in the Countess's bedroom. You know, it was so cool. I love the opportunity to be creative in order to make the show more better. Mm-hmm.
To make the show more better.
Sounds like a live movie.
Yeah. Well, and so, you know, elephant in the room of this upcoming production of Bohème 2.0 is that it's online.
Yeah.
So I would love to. So the other two guests that we have are the technical director and the music director. So now, before we started, what I thought was, you know, when Elijah was labeled as technical director, in my mind, I think opera technical director. I think of like platforms and turntables and lighting cues and stuff like that. But a technical director, when it comes to a live stream production, has a much different role. So Elijah, would you mind speaking to your role with this production?
Of course. So my role isn't that different. I mean, I'm just, you know, instead of being on stage, I'm sitting at home in front of like three monitors trying to make sure that there's no lag or latency. So that's really the big issue that you face when you're doing something like this, is that even if you're doing a regular Zoom call trying to talk about something like work, you know, it may be impossible because everyone's lagging out at different times and it becomes difficult. So being able to get, you know, like more than one person in a Zoom call and have them talk, sing and talk and all that is a bit of a challenge. So basically my main goal is to make sure that everyone sounds good, make sure that the internet is good, and if there's a problem, to just try to fix it on the fly. It's just, you know, most times sends me into a panic, but I think I do it okay.
You do it great.
So
thank you.
So how this is kind of a joint question to both James and Elijah. So I know, like, from trying to sing Happy Birthday on a group call to trying to
teaching voice lessons on FaceTime.
Oh, I've been teaching voice lessons on FaceTime, and it's a cluster. It's horrible.
Syncing,
it's the worst.
Yeah.
FaceTime is the worst.
Oh,
don't
do
FaceTime. Use Discord. Discord's way better.
Oh, I know. No, I, you know, I wish I could, but
getting 5-year-olds to figure out Discord.
Oh yeah, no, I teach like kids. Mm-hmm.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So FaceTime, I just like FaceTime their uncle's iPad or whatever. But knowing that there is that latency, and like having had experience trying to bypass that latency, like Elijah, how are you managing that? And James, as music director, how are you managing that?
Go ahead,
Elijah. I don't do anything to manage it. It's all Elijah
and his manager. No, that's not true, Jim.
Well,
how did you manage it with the chorus last night?
Well, I pretty much just get them started, and then it's whatever happens happens, and it's in Elijah's magic hands.
I have to imagine though that there's an extreme degree of flexibility still, though.
Yeah, there is. I mean, honestly, Jim and I do have to work together. So he has to keep them. Basically, he starts them off. So essentially, what we do is like we have to start the same time, and he makes sure that that's done. I would be completely lost without him. So we actually do work very closely together when we're doing the live shows. Like, we'll be messaging each other back and forth and just like, oh, how did that sound? Are they behind? Are they too fast? What do we need to do? Things like that. But thing with the latency is like, you know, my background is in technology. I've first microphone was a pair of headphones that I turned into a microphone. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I've been dealing with like audio and the internet for quite some time, had my own podcast. I'm very aware of the limitations. I feel like, you know, once you are aware of the limitations, you can, and aware of like the rules, you can kind of like bend them a little bit. So the main thing is that I have a faster internet connection. I can kind of compensate a little bit for anyone else that's kind of laggy. It does get a little more complicated considering that there's just not people like in the same state as we are, but they're all over the country. So the further they are away, the more lag and latency you are introducing into the mix, which can kind of be complicated.
And yeah, because it'd be like, it's obviously fractions of a second, but like, in singing, like that's something, you know.
Oh, yeah,
like anyone that's sung in a choir knows that, like, the end of a consonant, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, it's the difference between t and t.
Did you guys get a chance to watch the show?
Did we get a chance to? No, not yet.
Okay, you should watch it. It's pretty incredible. I mean, dealing with the lag is amazing. I can't even pretend to understand what they did.
So. Sorry, go for it.
Another big part of it is, like I said, is Jim, because he does, you know, he's the piece and everything, and he does make sure that there's cue notes and everything that really helps guide people through this, like, storm that they're going through of lag and latency and stuff like that. Mm. So, like I said, it's really a combination of me during the technical side, making sure that everyone's internet is not just fast, because that's a big part of it. Another part that a lot of people don't realize is making sure that the internet connection is stable, doing that and handling all the tech issues. But then there's him making sure that the piece has the cue notes and that everyone is understanding the music. So it's a very close symbiosis between like how we handle the situation.
Yeah, I'm curious, because obviously y'all have been through a rehearsal process on this now. Like, how much of your adjusting, like, and any production there's natural adjusting, is like on the fly, and how much of it is like listening back to what you've got, you know? Like, are there records or recordings kept of like every rehearsal, essentially, or like?
Yes.
Yeah. So we should walk them through the entire process, maybe. Yeah. And that would help.
Yeah.
So we got the cast together and talked to Jim. Jim created a track for us that we all sing to at the same time. We all use the same application. And so through that, we are able to create minimal lag on our end as much as possible. By all playing the track at the same time in the same application. And then, so then once we got that and we made some adjustments and stuff, thank you, Jim, for making all of the adjustments everyone asks for all the time. Once we got that, we would do like a music rehearsal and go back through and see if there's any spots that we needed to, fix as a group, I guess. and then sort of did like some acting things. So we shaped the what the viewer would see as much as we possibly could by going back through and watching the video. Like Bernard and I spent a lot of time kind of like you would as a movie director, mm-hmm. like watching the video and seeing what would work and like, and what wouldn't, like how would the audience perceive what we're doing and what, like what would they read it as, you know, if we put our hands in this spot at the same time, or if we look at the video versus looking at each other, if we, you know, all these things, these small things that make a difference in how the performance looks and sounds.
And yes, so just for more context, absolutely. Yeah, so was this all, was there any iteration of this production before the pandemic? Like, or was this completely inspired, like, not inspired by, but you know what I mean? Like
100% like, yes. Inspired by. In my pre-show speech, I said this, and I really feel like it's true for me. When I thought about the possibility of not singing with another person for like months at a time, or maybe like ever again, it made me really sad. And then I read this article, I don't know if you guys saw, I can't remember what the name of the group is, but there's this group of musicians who've been like passing recordings back and forth to make like quote unquote live performances. Mm-hmm. You know, like one person would record one part and then send it to someone else and they would record that. And then and in the article, the guy said, I already had this idea to do like a live show. And then he said, there won't be any live performances of opera in April. And I was like, well, I can't let that be true. Like, I can't let that be true. It made me feel really sad, like really, really sad. So so that's why I wanted to do our show as quickly as possible. We had our dress rehearsal on the Wednesday before May 1st. What was that, the 30th or the 29th?
29th.
Whatever that, the 29th?
Yeah.
Because I wanted to make sure that there was live opera in April for us.
So, yeah, I am still very curious about the figuring out of the how. Like, do you remember early conversations of...
Oh, God, yes.
...how to do this?
Well, first, the hardest question for me to answer in the beginning was what opera to choose.
Sure.
Because we thought about doing something like a little more straightforward, like Traviata, or maybe a Mozart opera, that would be less like less would have less rubato and less possible confusion. But then we thought maybe the rubato was helpful because we could, you know, zhuzh things a little bit.
The expectations.
What we're learning about. Yeah. And what we're learning about this medium, it would be easier to work in.
Right.
So that was the hardest question for me to answer. And I thank God for Lauren Berman and Greg Tufts, because I talked to them and I was just like, you know, talk me, like, help me think through this. What do you guys think? Like, blah, blah, blah. And then Elijah, do you want to talk about our conversation?
Which one?
Any of them from the beginning.
So essentially, came to me with this idea and was excited because, you know, if you say this to anyone, they'll say, you know, that's impossible. You can't do that because of lag will kill you. It's difficult. And she was like,
I said that.
You know, is there a way to get this done? And I'm like, I don't know. Let's find out. Because I feel like people tend to get defeated and they don't really try things. So I was eager to try something new that hadn't been done. So we basically like figured it out. I know she did some research to see if this had been done before. I did some research. And basically, most of the shows that we saw were actually pre-recorded and then streamed live. So it became more and more tantalizing to do
right.
a show that was just like, and in real time.
Yeah.
So it took some like figuring out and to try to figure out the best way to do this, best way to compensate for lag. So essentially everything has a purpose, like the specific program that we use to play our music. We're using that specific program for a reason, because using an audio player like iTunes or Windows Media Player or Windows Groove or whatever it's called right now, we have like, you know, kind of like phase shifting where it's like this brief pause before the song starts, when it, so it transitions to the next song more easier when you're listening to it. That can introduce more lag. So we had to find an application that didn't do that. So it was basically kind of learning as you go. What's the best application to use? What's the best program to use? How do we do this? Whose internet is the least stable, and how do we like compensate for that, and yeah. so on and so forth?
Well, because yeah, at that so point, you're like,
there was,
yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Finding the right actors too, who would be willing mm-hmm. to try something that could potentially go terribly and still feel good about it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, the frightening thing, I love the people that are actors. They're amazing. They're definitely troopers. The thing is too, that's very scary. Now, acting is obviously a very, you know, vulnerable thing that you're doing. And you listen to it just on like when just on the your headphones, there is lag there. There is no lag on the actual stream. When you're listening to it on the Zoom call, it's very like laggy. It doesn't sound that good. So they basically have to trust me when I say, yeah, it actually does sound good. I know you said, you know, you feel like you're behind right now, but no, you're spot on. Good. Just keep going. There's like that's one of the key ingredients is trust.
If I can add to that, it absolutely. Really, it just sounds like a three ring circus on the Zoom.
Then
you go over and watch the YouTube stream that we were that Elijah was streaming, and it's like, wow, magic.
Yeah. Well, and that is interesting to me from the like. As a person that's sung in a thing before, you sometimes are in that position where you have to trust your eyes more than your ears. Like, is it a similar sensation, or is it completely different to that?
Not really. You have to trust just your own sense and kind of block out what everybody else is doing or any sound anyone's making, and just go with the track that's playing through your own headphones. You get that track from your own PC, and then you get all the lag effect sounds from everybody else that's singing along, and it's not anywhere close to in time. But you just have to trust that, and then Elijah somehow magically fits it in so that it's all together.
Yeah, and so James, do you remember when you were first approached with this concept? Like, what were your first thoughts?
Well, at first, I was thinking, that would be cool, but I don't see how this could be done. And we did a couple of tests where I was playing live, and Joanna sang, and it seemed to work a little bit, I guess, but just trying to play and listen live, and we didn't have the mics worked out right away. I was just like, this will never happen. And so, I mean, it did happen in a different way, and the best way was for me to pre-record the track, which isn't the most ideal for an operatic production, but I mean, who knew that we were ever gonna do one live in real time online either? So I mean, as far as like the general norm would go for a production like this, I guess we are the norm right now. We're just creating that.
Right.
The key is, for right now at least, to have a pre-recorded track and have the singers live, and then maybe in the future we can find a way to have a live orchestra to go with it. But
yeah,
One step at a time.
That's my goal.
One miracle at a time.
Yeah. Well, I wanna touch more on that because I find it fascinating. You know, I think like obviously like linear spectrums can probably be reductive, but as far as the spectrum of streamed content to opera, like those are pretty much two ends of it, you know? Like you don't get any more live art than opera, and you don't get any more combining things that like not combining, but like, you know what I mean? Like a combination of medium. But then you have something like where streaming, the real onset of it is like people playing video games in their office by themselves. Like you don't, in some ways, streaming, you don't get any more, I guess, isolated. I mean, obviously like community building around streaming is way more complicated than that. But I'm curious, you know, like mentioning the idea of basically building a new norm. Like, what is that experience like for something like opera where, you know, so many of these norms have been set, you know, centuries
ago. For hundreds
ago.
Of years?
Right.
Yeah. Man.
Well, I'm not much of a gamer, but I think that with the game, anything that's happening in the game is the result of something that's pre-programmed into the software. I mean, you hit a button and boom, your guy is dead. Or someone else's guy is dead. Or boom, you're driving a car and you're around the corner. Well, there's no coding to what the singers are executing through their mics. It's just turn it on and whatever happens, happens. I mean, that would be kind of cool to have like a GTA Bohem or something, but where, you know, maybe in this case, I don't know. Like,
gosh, Jim.
Well, Rosetta steals the car and drives off into the sunset.
Yeah.
And
there are like, you know, Minecraft Rodolfo servers. Rodolfo
takes the treasure chest and shoots.
Yeah.
I don't know.
There have been people that doing like Minecraft server concerts. Like, I think it was like that band that's, I don't know how big they've been, but I know that they're in the last couple of months they've been big, 100 Gex. They did like they rented a Minecraft server of some kind and had like, I don't know if it was hundreds or thousands of people for a live show. I think like someone else also performed.
That's so cool.
Yeah. Wow. It's obviously like everybody's just a little block person, you know?
Yeah.
But it's a weird time to be considering live art.
Well, and that kind of brings me, so this is something that I was interested in talking about before we started recording. Sure. Something that Core has been about since the beginning has been intimacy. That's when in the landscape of Chicago opera, you know, there's the storefront opera scene is thriving. And what's nice is that there are a couple companies that, you know, will sometimes, you know, they have like similar missions, but like not, that doesn't happen too often. Everyone kind of marches to the beat of their own drum. And what I always think of with Core is intimacy. Like there's, you know, there's salons, there's these performances in bars and houses, and it's always very like close and tight knit and connected. And I'm curious how the work that you put in trying to foster that same sense of intimacy in an online performance.
Well, I mean, when I was talking a little bit about the process that Bernard and I went through, you know, working out Mimi and Rodolfo, it was a little bit the same. Thinking about how what we did and where we sat and how we looked at what times we looked at the camera, you know, would affect our the audience's interaction with us, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's really fascinating actually, like to create really intimate moments, we would like come towards the camera, you know? Yeah. And then like to feel more expansive or larger moments would move away. stuff like that. It's about thinking specifically about how the actor interacts with the camera would affect the audience to create that sense of intimacy. And I think we were pretty successful. When you watch it, shoot me a message and let me know what you think. But I think that like that whole feeling of being in the same room with another person is super important right now. And the feedback I kept getting was that people forgot that Bernard and I were hundreds of miles away from each other and that we were in the same room. They thought that we were in the same room together. So it was like, you know, you just forget after a while that, that people aren't actually touching each other.
Yeah.
And
that was kind of what I was going for. Sorry. What were you going to say,
Elijah? If I can add to that, you know, Roger Ebert once said that true art is defined by its ability to endure through the ages and endure through like technological advancement. And the thing is that that's what I love about opera, what I love about art, because you're essentially taking something abstract, like emotion, and turning it into something tangible that people can see, hear, and feel.
Yeah.
And I, you know, and that's why I think it fosters that same amount of intimacy online, because people recognize those emotions, they recognize those facial expressions. Then it's a combination of age that we live in. We have so many people that have long distance relationships or communicate using FaceTime or something like that, that it's become a norm to like get really intense emotional reactions by watching someone like in a Zoom call or on FaceTime, something like that. So it's all those combinations of things wrapped up into one. I think that's why there's still this high level of intimacy going into the show.
Yeah.
And
that's why you're the technical director.
I find that fascinating in the sense of, you know, thinking about that, like, have y'all maybe personally thought at all about what this might look like post pandemic, you know, like assuming there is a post pandemic, but like, you know,
that's fucking real, dude.
Is there a world where, you know, I don't know, like I'm thinking of maybe like new opera or something where maybe, I don't know, like what have y'all thought at all about that?
Yes, actually, I've been thinking about the next production I want to do, and how we can shape that online, like what that would look like. So I think that if we accept the world of online as part of our like possible entertainment experience with regards to opera, like I think that we can create productions that live in an online world, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I think online only enhances everything as we go forward too.
Yeah. Sorry.
So the thing that's fascinating to me too with all of this, with the world that we're living in, is, you know, you see so many of these like Zooms and Discords, like these companies and these programs, like the amount of innovation they've had to go through in the last 2 months is pretty monumentous. Like I know Discord just bought like a bunch of noise canceling software property to like make their noise canceling so much more enhanced. And I'm sure that there's, you know, I'm not a tech finance expert by any stretch of the imagination, but I can only imagine that there's a lot of that thought going on right now. You know what I'm saying? I'm curious for y'all, like, if you had a wish list of things that worked better for this, for doing a live digital opera, like, what would you want to see, like, a dev develop?
For me, immediately, I would love to be able to turn the volume of Zoom down and turn the volume of my other applications up. Mm. So, yeah. I mean, that's like an immediate issue that needs to be addressed. Long term, I think it would be really great to maybe think about the technology needed for specific roles, like for a director, you know, someone who's who could control what the audience is looking at through the technology that they're using. Because that, I mean, like right now I have to rely on the actors in the same way that you would in a production where you're like, is that person going to hit their entrance? We'll see. But it'd be really great if we could take, I mean, I don't want to take their, you know, their autonomy away, but I would love to be able to let them just focus on the music and the acting and be able to shape what the viewer sees in real time without having to rely on the actors.
Yeah. No, that would,
cause it's awkward. it's awkward as hell. Like, you know, having to start and stop your video while you're singing, or start and stop your, like mute or unmute yourself. Like all those things are things that we haven't had to think of before.
Start your own soundtrack.
Right.
Yeah.
It's those things are so difficult. Like moving ahead, I think that having those things answered would be really great so that everyone can perform at their best. I'm sure you have a ton, Jim and Elijah.
I think you hit most of them. Just for me, I mean, yeah, volume control, you know, getting everyone together. And it's, you know, we're at the beginning of something, and it, yeah. I mean, the future is our oyster of technology. I don't know. my programming oyster, but someone else's. it's good that we're getting this all out here on the air, right? Maybe someone will hear it.
And hashtag like, not my oyster.
Yeah. Maybe someone will develop core software.
Ooh. That's K-O-R.
Yeah.
Your core interface here for opera nerds.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
Elijah, were you about to say something?
Yeah, so as far as me, I have a laundry list if you want to hear it. The main thing that would make things a lot easier is the ability to turn off noise cancellation and sound adjusting. That's built inherently in a lot of software.
Uh-huh.
Because a struggle that I have is that the programs are specifically made to cancel out loud noises when we're doing an opera.
Oh. Yeah, it's all loud noises. Yeah.
So that's a problem. So that would be great. The ability to add like a null user that can like a music through or something like that, that everyone can hear without it being canceled out or muffled would be great. Long term, something that would be really cool for a software like this and would, I think, would enhance an experience like this would be like VR support. I think would be really cool.
VR support, you said?
Yes.
By the V, we lost you just on the V.
Yeah.
I thought you said PR. I would love some PR.
See, wouldn't we all? Like virtual reality, so they could, you know, like they're right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be so cool.
Wow.
Ooh.
That
would be cool.
That would enhance things for the actors. Like, I feel like I was talking with Andrea Hansen the other day, and the thing that's missing from the process is being able to interact with your co-singers in real time, you know? And that's something that I think all of us really enjoy. It feels a little removed when you're like watching a video and processing it and then, you know, trying to act more like a film actor would, where, you know, it's really about how it's perceived versus, you know, maybe that actual interaction happening on stage, you know? And I think that it would be really great to have some way for us to really be able to think and feel as a group, you know?
And if I can add to that, it really is like, you know, being a film actor, like working on a Marvel movie where you're on this like giant green screen stage and you don't know who you're acting with and stuff like that. You have to like trust the director and just like, there's a talking raccoon right there. Just talk to it. Okay, fine.
That's what I like, kind of going back to the issue of like trying to foster a sense of intimacy online. Like, it is so fascinating to me how quickly we've adapted to the idea of like, oh yeah, like, you know, face-to-face interaction or rather online interaction can be just as fulfilling as in-person interaction. Like, I know that like through all of this, like I had my birthday in quarantine, and it was my 30th
happy birthday.
Oh, thank you. I had my 30th birthday in quarantine, and like I had all these grand plans for what I was gonna do and like the people I was gonna see and the times I was gonna have with the people I cared about. And what happened instead is like, you know, I had a, like, my friends made me a video, and, like, I experienced the same emotions that I would have experienced had I been with my friends, but I experienced them through a digital medium.
Yeah, and obviously it's not a perfect replacement, but it is, like,
but it's available, and it's there, and it's real, and I think that that's something that that gets discounted when we're talking about online interaction or online art, is that even though it's online, like, it's still real.
I mean, I was able to call up all of those Mimi feelings. It wasn't like, you know, I wasn't, I didn't feel like I couldn't do it because I wasn't there with the other person. So that was good, I guess. It was hard afterwards, after it was over, because then I was by myself.
Yeah. Oh my God.
So, but,
That's the only thing, is that like once it's over, you don't have that same warmth. But in in the moment, it's wild how quickly like you're surrounded by, cause like it with in person, and I'm clearly just, I'm just on a tear at the moment, but like, whatever. It's wild. Like let's say you're at a party or you're at a performance and like it tapers off very slowly and like you kind of get used to being alone, like person by person. Whereas like when a video call ends, it's just like, you're surrounded by people, and now you are completely alone.
Yeah. I think, you know, that's maybe the most strange adjustment.
You know, if right? I can add to that, too.
Absolutely.
You know, I've done so many different shows and concert settings and everything. And many times, almost every time after the show, something comes up where it's like, hey, we're headed out to the bar, or we're headed out for this. And then we go out for like another hour, like a big group of us. And, you know, this, I'll shut off Zoom and I'll be like, maybe I'll go eat some ice cream or something.
Yeah.
It is weird. Cause it's like, oh yeah, usually we hang out a little bit, but you know, not right now. But it really, makes you think that, you know, you shouldn't take a whole lot for granted sometimes.
Yeah,
absolutely.
You appreciate what you have, and we have this, and that's been very fulfilling.
Yeah, but we think we should normalize post Zoom hangouts. Like the thing that we do, we have a D&D. We have a few things that we do on Discord with folks, like socially.
Cool.
But there is always like with the D&D session, for example, there's like a beginning and an end. And one of my favorite things is when like a person or two does kind of just like hang out on the call a little bit after. It doesn't always happen, but like sometimes it does happen and you're like, oh, this is like that. You know what I mean? Where like, if it's like a Discord group of like eight people and then like one or two, like Kita does that a lot.
Yeah.
And with it, and then we'll both be like still on the call, just like,
hey, are you still there? And then they're like, yeah, and like, do you want to keep hanging out?
And then like it'll be like one of us will be doing laundry or like, you know, editing something or playing a game or something like that, and like not really paying it. It's different. It's even that's different though than like get because like in drinks, like, getting drinks is like a very actively social activity.
Yeah.
Whereas like Discord hanging out is so so passive.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, I think it's really fascinating.
That's the thing I have to equate to it. It's like online gaming.
Yeah.
After like a long session of like playing a game with like a group of people that like do feel like you're hanging out with them while you're in that game, but then there's like after the game is over, it's just like, oh, okay, I guess I'll sit here then.
Yeah. No, it's this concept of intimacy online and like interaction online and art making online. It's like online, like objectively is like, I don't know. This time in world history is so fascinating just from like a human connection standpoint. And to me, it's just a testament of the perseverance of who we are.
Yeah.
It's cool.
Well, we have a few minutes left. So the last thing we do with all of our guests is a 1-minute plug for anything they have upcoming. Sometimes it's very obvious, like letting folks know where they can watch an upcoming live stream of an opera, if that were a thing that were happening.
Yes.
Otherwise, we love hearing shout-outs to the folks that are doing dope work or any media that you're consuming personally, self-care, or otherwise, music, movies, TV shows, things like that.
Cool. I guess I'll plug our opera. We have two events coming up in the immediate future. One is this Friday night, we're doing a watch party with the cast and crew of Act One. You can find that on my YouTube channel, JOHANNAMOFFITT. And then on May 15th, we will be having our Act Two.
Nice.
It's gonna be great. Joined by chorus and more people. So, you know, Elijah's sweating a lot right now, but everything's going great.
Yes, I am.
If you click subscribe on my channel, you will see both of those there. Okay, anyway, sorry.
Click subscribe and like it and ring the bell. Do all those things.
Yeah. Do all those things.
I keep forgetting about the bell.
As for me, I have a video game blog and YouTube. The video game blog is www.icon.com. The YouTube channel is YouTube.com/theiconstream, where I talk about video games and technology. And currently I'm doing a piece on finding the first female female game developer, because she is suspiciously missing from history right now. So we're trying to fix that.
Hell yeah.
Cool.
Okay. Well, I just a few months ago, I guess almost a year ago now, a few colleagues and friends of mine founded a new company called Progressive Musicians. And we just launched a few months ago, and we are an internet competition for pianists, violinists, and guitarists of all ages and levels, including adult amateurs. And you can apply on the internet before May 15th for a big discount, or by June 1st is our deadline. You'll be judged, evaluated, and then given a chance to make improvements on your performance before winners are chosen. Winners get to play at Vile Recital Hall in Carnegie Hall at New York.
Oh my god.
Amazing.
That's wild. That's interesting.
That's so cool.
Both deeply interesting plugs. That's rad as fuck. Well, thank you all so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you all so much for listening. I've been Daniel Johansson.
I continue to be Maureen Smith.
If you want to keep up with what we're up to, There's so many ways you can do that. The first is to head over to scopymag.com. That's our website. We post all of our articles and podcast episodes there. You can also keep up with us on social media. We have a Facebook page called Scopy Magazine. We also have a Facebook group that we love and adore called Sounding Board, where we talk about local arts, local politics, astrology memes, you name it. There you can also find a link to our Discord server called Sounding Board as well, where we hang out, have fun, have a good time. And yeah, so check it out. Otherwise, you can find us on Instagram, Twitter, and Tumblr under ScopyMag, spelled the same way as the website, S-C-A-P-I-M-A-G. And you can find the podcast, the one you're listening to right now, in most podcast places, including Google Play, iTunes Podcasts, and Radio Public.
And I'm here, as always, to talk about the importance of subscribing. If you head to our website, scopymag.com, and go to our subscribe page, the best way to do that is by becoming a member. For $2 a month, you will receive an email in your inbox every time we post. So say goodbye to that social media algorithm, and hello to our content. Also, we have merch for sale. If you head to scopymag.com/store, you can buy your new favorite t-shirt, and that is a promise. Also, if you are a business or an entity or just have something fun to say and want to advertise with us, please feel free to reach out to us at scopymag@gmail.com. So, give a little, give a lot, and if you can't give, then listen, participate, and share.
Cool. Thanks again so much for listening. Go out and make something.
Yep.